The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
I heard you wanna chat with your girl, chat with your girl, chat with your girl, chat. Business and beauty, come and confess how you make your money and say yes to the guest.
Oh my gosh, you guys, we have the one, the only Miss Peppermint on the podcast. Oh my gosh, thank you for joining.
Yes, honey, thank you.
Your career is so massive. I'm going to brag about you for a few minutes. So, performer, singer, actor, activist, drag icon, season 9. Oh my gosh. Stars and outs TV's Call Me Mother, Pose as Miss Euphoria, Broadway Queen, and Head Over Heels. Nominated for Outstanding Online Journalism for the GLAAD Media Awards for Legendary, the docuseries, Twitch Queen, and Fashion Queen because it's fashion. It's fashion. It's fashion. Wow. I can't believe it's like you blink and then you're like, and you were just at the SAG Awards with all the dolls, Selena Gomez, yeah. Reese Witherspoon, Rosario Dawson. Like, wow.
You know, when I hear it, you say it back, I'm like, who are you talking about?
You, bitch. You are that girl. And although you were a runner up, I feel like you're winning at life and just representing for so many people. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I have so much to ask because you've really transcended, you know, even beyond what maybe many and millions have thought would come out of Drag Race and the fame. And you've just literally set the bar even higher. And congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I'm really grateful. I'm grateful for the platform that Drag Race has given me. I'm grateful to be a part of such an awesome community that is inclusive and loving. And then I'm also really grateful for a lot of the tools of the trade I picked up before even going to Drag Race. I'm grateful for the life skills that being one of the girls teaches, that drag teaches, that being gender expansive teaches. And I think those are skills that are helpful in life and in business. I'm feeling pretty good.
what does it take to run your career now? I'm just gonna jump into it, like, because there has to be a unique team of people that understands someone with the popularity of a Drag Race superstar, right? But to put you and to work with you in a space that is linear, that is Hollywood, that has to take a certain amount of person. So who is behind, like, the Peppermint stash?
Well, I definitely have some wonderful people that I work with on my team. I have a great publicist, Ken. Hey, shout out to Ken, my assistant. I think I have a great management team, a great team that works with me on my music and my agent. All of those things that you hear about people thinking when they're like, oh, Hollywood. I think the first thing that people think of is, when they think of an agent or a manager or whatever, any of these jobs, is someone to tell me how to do what I need to do to become better. And I mean, quite frankly, what it would take for me to be really would be to split myself into a million pieces and do all these different jobs, but I can't. And so I have really wonderfully skilled people around me who really understand me and my vision for things and what I would say yes to, what I would say no to, sort of what my dreams and aspirations are. And then they're able to help me carry those things out because I can't lift everything. I can't be in two places at once. And sometimes it requires pretty much being in two places at once. And so but the superstar, at least in terms of this conversation, goes to the gold star of the day with you, Miss Star, goes to my assistant, Jake, who probably doesn't sleep and definitely is like up before I am, goes to bed later than I do, and is a real trooper. And also does a lot of the heavy lifting, quite literally, luggage and all.
That's amazing. It's what's so unbelievable to me is that, you know, we're seeing like unconventional beauties and personalities like rise to fame, influencer, drag, actor, and in every genre of entertainment. But I think the power of being successful is, for me at least, is to let my freaking team know what the fuck is up with who I am as a person. And I think from where you started coming on TV, because this is the tea. I feel like when people go on TV, that's what you are known as. And it's never going to leave you, whether you were an American Idol, Drag Race, Survivor. It will just follow you forever. But with you, I feel like you've kind of cracked that mold because you've had your own transformation journey with your identity, your gender identity online. So in hiring this team, assistant manager, publicist, do you feel like you had to brief them on who you are and where you're at in your life and how you want to move forward with who you are?
Well, I do think that there's a little bit of, you know, I think based on what I see in other people and what's reflected in other people, I'm a little bit of a strange cookie in that I am so interested in drag, but also in makeup artistry, but also in Broadway and singing and dancing, and then also in being a producer and a director, and then also in recording music, and then also being an activist. And so like, there's all these different things that I'm certainly not the only one who's interested in all those things, but I try my best to bring wear each of those hats sort of equally. And so I think that is unusual for people who are used to maybe assisting a drag entertainer. I know that, I mean, the Drag Race girls are different than, are certainly not the typical drag entertainer. But even, you know, be someone who's gonna assist a drag queen might expect to go to the club and carry her bag, help her with her wig or something, but they might not be expecting to go to the UN with her or Supreme Court while she sits and listens to, you know, arguments on the rights for LGBT people, you know, and so that's a little outside of the box. And so it did take a little bit of, when it was new, a new relationship, it does take a little, you know, introductory sort of conversations about like, why I may be going in a different direction or what it is that I'm interested in. It takes some getting used to, you know, for sure.
Because obviously online, you have a relationship with someone like Bob who has transcended the Drag Race superstardom. But in TV, in entertainment, do you feel like having peers that have a similar, you know, aspiration to go above and beyond what the Drag Race mold would be help you out mentally?
Yes. I mean, absolutely. And to be honest with you, from my perspective, a lot of the Drag Race girls that I'm close to have similar experiences. We've all done a little TV. We've all done, you know, nightclub performances and different things like that. And so having those peers, it is helpful. And I also have another really close group of girlfriends who are transgender, who are also in the world of entertainment. And we talk constantly. And though that's really who I bounce most of my ideas and thoughts and fears off of. And you mentioned Bob, who is a very dear friend. And, you know, we have a wonderful bond. And I know that when I want to do something completely off the wall, Bob is going to be one of those people that's like, I'm down, let's do it. Yeah, I have a really eclectic group of people that I would call my own sort of chosen family and, you know, my own community. And so that is helpful and comforting. But I still do feel like my journey is basically a continuation of what I started even before Drag Race. And that for me was very specific, you know?
Mm. And how does one at home find a sisterhood or people that wanna have a similar path? Like, there's social media, but how do you really check a doll to see if they're, you know, super good or super bad? Like, how are you able to check a vibe and find those people?
I mean, I do think it radiates off of them, regardless of where someone is in their journey, in their life, how old they are. Of course, different experiences and different levels will give somebody knowledge and expertise and experience, which informs the choices they make, the things they do. But I really do think that the essence of that person is there all along. And so even if they're a little baby just graduating from high school, or if they're somebody who's been around the scene and the industry for a long time, I think that the essence is the same. And I won't say good or bad, but I will say it is important for me to surround myself with people who are equally as career-minded and obviously have sort of the same social standards that I have and get me. If they can really get me, if we're to the point where you get me, then that must mean I'm getting you. And if we're getting each other, then the work is done, you know?
Well, you know what's so funny? Because I'm in my 30s and, you know, being an influencer, like, that started in, like, my 20s, I had already built a sense of social skills, you know? And when I look at the kids that are what I call the look queens and they go into, like, a social setting, they don't know how to talk or make eye contact and stuff. And there's a similar parallel that I see in the drag community where they're just look queens and they're on Instagram, selfie this, selfie that. And then when they get to like a reality setting, it's like, are you okay? Like, can we have a normal conversation? So what I've learned from, you know, the way that you engage and what I admire is you're like such a sister. You're such like a mother, daughter. You're just very much like that family go-to gal that I see all the girls kiki with. And I'm like, it's because this bitch gives backstage. You just give fucking backstage. You kiki, you kaikai. You just like, you have that. And I think that comes from backstage and just getting ready with the girls and being in that social setting. And I hope everyone can really learn to not be afraid to get out there and be social. And it's ironic that we're social on social media, but it's doing more damage than good because they just learn to be antisocial at the end of the day.
That's true. You know, and I can't even say that I've quite mastered social media yet. Girl, I still don't have a TikTok, and I'm not mad about it. I remember, you know, in the 90s, working at the club, we would see each other once a week at the party, and you would see somebody, you didn't know who they were, you would recognize them, hey girl, you're the one that was wearing the silver thing last week, and you would talk for hours, because I was notorious after the show for sitting at the front of the club, which is where where it would be cooler. You get the draft coming in right at the front and you could cool off. And girl, we would go out to the cart. There's a street cart in front and you get yourself a knish or some kind of street food from the cart and sit in the front of the club and eat it and talk until it was time to get paid. And then we would be like, okay, girl, I got to go get paid. I'll see you next week. And I didn't have her number. I didn't know where she anything about her other than what we talked about. And I would just have to trust that I would see her. And lo and behold, same time, same bad channel, would see her at the club and we would sit down and continue the conversation. Oh, and wow. So that's an obviously a very real life, in-person, you know, exchange that we would have. And those types of exchanges were building skills for getting to know people that I didn't really know. And I, to this day, don't know after the club closed. It was almost like they existed in the club. Now I know that these are real people with real lives. And not to say that we were being superficial. We were just acquaintances and we were passing the time and getting to know each other. But, you know, that I think that sort of backstage moment that you're talking about was a big part of building community that, you know, especially back in the clubs, there's a lot of people who can't connect with other queer folks or other artistic folks or creatives, you know, in their hometowns, if it's a small hometown. And so they need to go to a larger city or go to the gay bar and talk with all the queens. And so that was very valuable. I do think there's a sense of that. Certainly there's community building on social media. We can meet more people than ever before. But I do think there's a certain, it's like one dimension, it's like one dimensional. It's not 3D. It's one dimensional. And it's there's a certain level that's missing from, or a certain layer that's missing from those types of interactions. If those are the only types of interactions that one has.
When I read your career, I'm like, you have to probably have had audition, casting director, secure publicist for the SAG Awards, and you have to talk to these people. And I feel like a lot of those social skills, I want to emphasize to the kids and the kids listening, like, or even adults that are too scared to invest in their social skills. Just be social for real, because it's going to get you far. Like, when you step into a room, like, can you walk me through a peppermint casting? What do you do? Like, how do you present yourself when you're in the room? Like, what is it like? Take me with you.
Well, you know, there's two pieces. There's three pieces, I think. I mean, if you're talking about an audition, because most of the types of castings that I'm involved in are theatrical auditions, mm-hmm. where I need to sing something and also recite something. And so most of those things are like the basic sort of standard set of things you need to do, the protocol for going to an audition, about what you wear, what you would bring, bringing a headshot, which is a picture, you know, and a resume or whatever. And that's the basic, you know, thanking everyone in the room, making eye contact with them. And then there's the audition material itself. If it's a dramatic piece or a sad piece or a funny piece, how are you going to connect with it? And can you really sell it? Which is one thing. But then the third level, which I think is the most important, is really being able to see you or me, you know, the person, being able to show them, the people behind the table, who you really are. And that, I think, is certainly the most valuable. And I think a lot of people, they put on a face and they put on sort of a persona that they're like, this is what I want to show these people. But you can usually tell when it's not really who the person is. Mm. And I have not even gotten most of the things I've auditioned for. But the things that I have gotten, I believe my personality really came through. And that's what they liked. Even if I messed up the words, didn't know the song, whatever, it's fine. You can learn a song, you know? And some of those other skills you can pick up as time goes on. But those real personal connections, those things that feel authentic and real, are definitely valuable. And so I try my best to be genuine when I walk into a room, look, like you said, making eye contact, listening to the people that I'm talking to rather than looking around the room. I hate to say it, but there's certain cities in this country that are focused on entertainment. And one of them definitely, I've noticed, doesn't really check the box when it comes to real, genuine, personal connections. I won't say which city that is.
What's interesting about you and what I really wanted to know, because there's peppermint and then there's obviously, right? And then there's like the raw version. So what was it like going into your pose audition for Miss, you know, into that? Were you wash face for that because of the character, or did you know? Because I would imagine, like, hey, an agent told me the age you get famous is the age you stay. So I can imagine, like, you or someone coming off a Drag Race is going to want to hold on to the grandiose of the peppermints and that. But now stepping into this, it's kind of like, I got to do audition for something that isn't asking of peppermint. They want to, you know, present this different role, separate from that persona.
Yeah, well, I would probably argue that in order for it to feel authentic to me, then I needed to bring some of that gal into the room. Mm-hmm. Of course, I knew it wasn't like a drag role. Mm-hmm. And I did audition, and it was a couple, I think I had there was two auditions, and I had a call back, and then I got the part. And it was a really intense sort of audition. I usually go to auditions very neutral makeup, you know, put on a little powder and a little, you know, I'm not trying to get up in full guiche for anything. And so, you know, I'll do a nice natural look. And I did not necessarily know the length of that. I didn't know how this was going to turn out. I did know that the role, because I only had a scene. And so when you work on a Ryan Murphy project, you don't have a lot of information about the entire script or right. where things are going, or where they're just like, you're going to fight and you don't like this, go. That's all you know. And so for me, I knew that the role required to be, it was had a lot of violence, that I was going to get beaten up, and that I would be simulating sex, and that there would be some potential nudity. That's all I knew. And I was like, I'm okay with that. When I realized that they needed me to take off my hair, which I didn't learn that until later, that was a gag. I was like, oh, you know, I was like, hold on.
That's what I'm talking about. Because when I picture peppermint, I expect the stones,
hair,
the sleeves, the titties, the jewelry, the hair. And the eye makeup, and I'm like, that is like the iconic like peppermint. And I'm like, how did she go into this? I'm like, did she keep it? Did she not keep it? And it's like someone for me to ask to take off my turban, which I've been asked before, and I've been like, maybe not today.
Yeah, what you is know? Going on? So, I wanted to. It was difficult. It was very personal. It was triggering for anyone who's trans or gender nonconforming or gender expansive. You know, I think even though I have to, well, I'll say it can be very triggering for a lot of us because all people, all entertainers are aware of how we look and what we present. But I definitely think that queer folks and gender expansive people are even more so cognizant of how we look and how we're being perceived. Because a lot of times it's an issue of safety. It's an issue of discrimination and things like that, as you know. But I knew that I was in comfortable, I was in a friendly setting. I had the opportunity to speak with the director of the episode, Janet Mock, about it. And she was obviously very encouraging, but she walked through it with me. And we had a little bit of back and forth. You know, she asked me what I was comfortable with and what would work, what might not work. We had a full discussion once I knew what they were requiring of me or asking of me. And it took some time for me to think about and really get comfortable with the idea. But then I had to go back to my time on Drag Race. Because when I did Drag Race, you know, I had already begun my medical transition. And I had to ask myself, when doing Drag Race, if people see you with no makeup, if people see you with no hair, does that mean you're not a woman? And the answer for me is no. It does not mean I'm not a woman. It means I'm still a woman. And regardless of what makeup I'm wearing or not, how my hair grows, whether I got inches and bundles, because my hair does, even if I was, you know, assigned female at birth, my hair probably, my mom doesn't have hair down her ass. So there's no reason for me to, you know? And so I think I had to sort of go back to that space of my womanhood is not at stake. I could be completely naked with surgeries, with no surgeries, with makeup, with no makeup, any of that stuff. And I'm still the same strong Black woman that I've always been. And so once I was in that headspace, I was like, okay. And then I thought about the actual material. You know, this is taking place in the 90s because it was Pose, a sex worker who was being beaten up and, you know, assaulted and discriminated against. And they wouldn't be letting me keep my gilda on. They wouldn't be like, girl, fix your hair. They would snatch it off and they would misgender me. And this is a very real experience that a lot of trans women have gone through in jails and in prisons across this country. And so I wanted to be as authentic to that as possible.
Was that heavy that once you actually got the material to channel that to represent so many people that have had that experience for you? Because I can't fathom, because me being a YouTuber, sometimes I subconsciously just forget who I'm representing because I don't want that like going into the moment, you know, whether I'm filming with like a celebrity or doing someone's makeup like super famous, because then I'm like, the community is like watching and I'm repping, and it's just like, fuck. So did you have to just acknowledge it and then just be like, what was that like?
I think there's always a piece of me that's like, well, what about the community, girl? And I don't know that that'll ever go away. Mm-hmm. But I did. It was really easy for me to, I can't say it was easy, but it did not take long for me to get into character and to get into the mindset. Even though I don't have the history of being a sex worker, being arrested and going to jail, or being beaten up by a client, because I used to kick everybody's ass. No, just kidding. I never had that experience. One thing that was really interesting is I was talking about that club that I used to go and sit at the front of the club was on the corner of 27th Street and 11th Avenue in New York. And it was called The Tunnel. It was in the 90s. People were doing drugs. People were overdosing, passed. Now they would take people who were like unconscious and put them out the back, because they didn't want to call the cops to the clubs. They would put them out the back and an ambulance would pick them up in the back. And there was, sex workers, you know, working the street. And everything was going on in the 90s. It was like, you know, adult Disneyland. Started when I knew that we were filming the show. They said, okay, this is where you need to report. And they gave me the address. And it was literally on the corner of 27th and 11th, right in front of the club that I used to work at, The Tunnel. And so anybody that goes back and watches the scene, there's a scene where we're outside and they come up to me where I'm working the street. That's literally on the doorsteps of the club that I used to sit at when I was cooling off, right in the front.
And so
I did. And I said, I can't believe I haven't been here in more than 20 years, you know, and obviously the club is closed. It's something else now. Club closed down 20 years ago. And so that was a real gag for me. And then all of a sudden it just felt very real, because I feel like I was being transported back in time. And I was really grateful that we were like there where I first started. So it was very full circle for me. And that was very emotional. So it was very easy for me to go back to get into this vulnerable sort of emotional mindset. Because I guess I had sort of connected with, not trying to be too philosophical, but I sort of connected with my inner child. That was one of the first places that I worked when I lived in New York City. I was in college and I was 18 at the time. And I was just figuring out my gender journey and just understanding drag. I was in drag, but ooh, don't look at any pictures. And so, you know, I was kind of that girl anyway, you know?
Wow, to have started there and to now be filming for a major like show, I can't fathom like what that would be like for you, like on set at work, clocked in. You got to process this, and you got a gig on a gig on a gig where you used to gig the giggery and the gaggery,
the giggery of it, the giggery and the gaggery. And I was taking pictures, girl. You know, I was taking all kinds of pictures and selfies. I was like, good grief, I can't believe. I was telling everybody, honey, I used to work here. You know, it was intense.
Wow. What has been the most hard part from in terms of building your entertainer brand since, you know, leaving Drag Race and then becoming this superstar, you know, entrepreneur and activist to get here?
The hardest part of building it?
Yes, yeah. Because I want the dolls to listen, because I feel like the race really starts after the race.
Oh, for sure. It definitely does. I can't say that it's been the easiest thing ever. This is going to sound so trite, but the hardest part for me is learning new songs, which I realized at a certain point in my life, I don't want to learn another damn song. Whatever I already know is what I know, because it's no fair. If you're 18, all you need to know is the song that came out 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. But if you're 40, or older, you know songs from that 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, late 2000s. It's just too much. And so I can't keep a million songs in my head. And I ain't trying to do whatever's on the radio at this minute just because it's on the radio. And so that's been a difficult part, is sort of keeping up with all of that. At a certain point, you're just like, I've done the work. Let me just enjoy the payoff rather than keeping trying to like... And so that's been a challenge, how much of this trying to keep myself trying to be young. You know, you're young at heart, and that is what it is. But trying, I don't know how successful that is. And so I don't really try anymore. But I am a bit of a workaholic. And so all the other stuff that comes with the territory for me is stuff I really enjoy, being overworked.
Really, still? Cause you're a stage girl at heart, you know, with the with the theater of it all, the musical theater of it all, and then the just the over the top persona that is Peppermint is just really, really cool.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about like real life experience because I know this is personal to each entertainer. With attending the red carpet, you know, at the SAG Awards, you look so beautiful. There was that element of just the extraness, but also, you know, very, very soft at times. But you could tell you were still in very much your oats and berries with the dress, which was gorgeous and just stoned and black eleganza. You must have swept you could have swept all those bitches off. Selena Gomez and Reese Witherspoon. I was like, step back, bitches. Like, first of all, I couldn't get over that you were there, but also like your look. Going back to the identity thing between being, you know, Peppermint, the drag star, plus like, you know, being a trans woman, like, do you pick and choose when you want to show off that? Or is that just still very you 24/7 when you go to stuff like that?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. Cause I do think it's important to be able to, and I talk to my team about this from time to time, you know, cause certain people outside of me are people that I don't know or people that aren't really in the scene do see that on my resume. They see drag queen by my name. And so they just assume that I'm some guy who's going to come in drag. So having to educate those people about, well, drag people who do drag can be male or female or non-binary or any of the, all of the above, you know, and having to educate them about that. And then, yes, I do drag, but right now I'm not in drag. That is a conversation that we occasionally have to have with people. But then at the end of the day, I realized nobody cares. If you look good, they don't, however I define it, whether it's drag or not, as long as you look good, they don't care. And I also realized on a low-key level, when I look at the other gals, they're in drag too. You know what I mean? You know, they're in drag. Girl, they're wearing the undergarments and they're pulled and tucked and pushed and, you know, it's there in drag. And so, you know, I when I look at it that way, I'm like, Peppermint kind of, you know, I'm definitely an around the way girl. Like, I like to relax. But when it's time for, a red carpet, you know, Kiki La La, I'm a glamour gal. Once a queen, always a queen, honey.
Right.
So we're going to bring some drag up in this piece, no matter what.
Right. I find that so awesome that, because I could understand how maybe like new producers or directors that you may bump into, you kind of want to stand out, but you don't want to stand out for the wrong reasons, but you want to like appease. So it's like, I remember when I started going to red carpet events, I'm like, like I'm wearing a gown, but my card says Patrick, and then they don't know what to call me. So I got confused, and then I'm a fucking influencer. So are they not going to take me seriously? And why am I here at this award show? And so it's like, it's such an identity crisis. And I do know they want like the viewership from my end of the stick, but at the same time, I want to be present and also taken seriously at these things. And I thought you were the perfect person to ask because I love a good transformation. And I feel like you as a strong woman, having come from the gaggery and the googery with the drags of it all, like transformation is still in very much your DNA and you want to show out.
I do. And when I'm there, you know, when I'm at, I'll tell you, I might have seen you. I don't even know. A couple years ago, I went to the MTV Music Video Awards. And it was the first like major red carpet that I'd done that I can remember. I'd done a few really high profile red carpets, but that was the first one that was really like in the entertainment sort of Hollywood world. And honey, that red carpet was a circus. And I had gotten invited. And I'm like, look, it's been a few years, but I was on an MTV show. And so I was thinking, okay, I'm not, you know, some A-list celebrity, but I was on one of their shows. And so I thought that that would give me the confidence boost for being there. And it did. Other people there were like, who is this bitch? You know, like they're looking for the top musicians, people who are nominated to go. And so I had a hard time. You know, I was being pushed and, you know, move out of the way. Here comes Queen Latifah, who I love and adore. I'll move out of the way for her any minute. You know, and, you know, it's just like I was getting pushed and get out of here, bitch. And so that did give me a little bit of anxiety. And then when I went to the SAG Awards, I was like, oh my gosh, they are going to be like, who is this, you know, girl, you need to be in the back, get out of here. And I was like, let me go early. Because go early, I'll get to have my red carpet fantasy.
Bitch,
I don't have to see anyone. I'll already be in there in my seat before anybody even gets there. And girl, we were not ready for the parking lot shenanigans that we all had to go through. Everybody's limo was like, it was like a
parade of just
a traffic
like
tram.
Traffic.
Yeah, and we were like, oh my God. So then finally we got in hours later. And everybody was like, we were, you know, going through COVID safety protocols and things like that. And so then when we got out, I was like, well, there goes my early. I'm not going to be early. And so I went in through security and I had my flip-flops on because I had my shoes in my hand. I was like, I ain't going to put these on until I get to the camera. And then my assistant and I got split up. So then I was like holding my flip-flops. I was like, oh, my Lord. So I like ran over and gave my flip. Anyway, I got into the line and, you know, we're in this sort of queue before we get to the actual step and repeat. And in front of me is Selena Gomez. Behind me is Reese Witherspoon. Next to me is Will and Jada Smith. Then is Kate Blanchett and Martin Short. And who else came by? It was just like everyone. And I was like, oh my goodness. I'm literally in line with these people. And so and they were like, oh, we haven't seen to each other. We haven't seen you. I love you, girl. Oh, you were great in that movie. You were great in that movie. Good luck tonight. And I was like, and so I did feel a little like, girl, what are you doing here? But then I had to stop. I was like, look, I'm a trained actor. I have a degree in musical theater performance. I was on Broadway. And I'm a member of SAG.
Period.
I pay my dues.
We have the same benefits, child. We have the same benefits.
Yeah, I voted for your asses. So I deserve to be here. I was invited by the team at SAG, the producers of the show. And so I felt like my invite was just as valid as anybody else's. And it was a wonderful experience. And I was feeling a little self-conscious. But then the other gals, you know, were, you look beautiful. Selma Hayek was like, you look stunning. Oh, Reese Witherspoon God. Was like, there was like a photographer who clearly didn't know who I was. And I was like, look, do they think I'm in drag? Even if they didn't think I was a drag queen and they just thought I was a trans woman, I'm sure they're like, what is this trans? You know, like there's nothing about me that the photographers were looking for the nominees and the people that they recognized. But Reese Witherspoon was like, oh no, we're putting Peppermint in here too. And we got in the picture. A couple people were like, you look beautiful, you look beautiful. Jada Pinkett Smith was like, you look stunning. And I was like, so do you, I'm a big fan. And my name is Peppermint. She's like, bitch, I know who you are. And I was like, oh my God. And then that's all I needed to hear. A few people telling me, and then the queen was like, oh, she's awake. All right, it's showtime. And then I was like, honey, this outfit is a jumper and a cape combined. I'm gonna work this cape. Bitch. So then I twirled on that, almost called a runway, on that red carpet. I was going up and down that thing, showing off, standing in front of Reese Witherspoon. Girl, I was showing off. And they were living, honey. They were living. And I was like, you know what? That's really me. That's my essence. I would be doing that even if I was at the nightclub. That's what the girls do. And so it just reminded me that I belong there and that I bring something valuable to that space. Mm-hmm. We all do. And so it took a minute for me to remember that. And so as there are, you said you wanted me to talk to the girls. So as there are moments, because there will be, where trans and gender nonconforming and non-binary individuals, minorities in general, people of color, all of the above, enter into spaces that typically we're not invited to, mm-hmm. that we are the only one of that we believe that we're the only ones there of that particular group, then please remember the power that we bring into those spaces, the power of the freedom of from the very strict gender binary, the power of, you know, femininity, if you're a femme being, you know, the power, you know, trans women carry the power of womanhood just as much as non-binary folks and non-binary femmes, and just as much as cis women do. We carry this essence with us, and we have a certain freedom because we've sorted through certain things that other people are afraid to address within themselves. Not saying that everyone's trans, but I'm saying that we all have a relationship to gender, and we all have a relationship to the gender expression and the performance of it all. And we as queer people have a certain power that is very palpable and is scary for some people. But I say own it when you walk into that room.
When you go home and you go and wash face quite literally at home, and you're on your phone in your bed, do you have any standout messages of appreciation from fans?
Use my makeup wipes to take off my makeup,
damn,
honey.
We gotta cut her a check now. Shit. Let me get my coins together, bitch. That's a pretty peppermint penny, bitch. Shit. When you're in wash face from our go-off makeup removing wipes and makeup dissolving mist, and you're at home, have there been any like standout messages of amazing reminders that you're meant to be where you are on the red carpet, on TV, as an entrepreneur and activist? Has there any been standout like messages? Or anyone in real life?
Yeah, you know, there's not really any mantras from people that are like encouraging me to go into those spaces, but there are some sort of thoughts that I remember from my journey that are very useful in reminding me that I still belong in those spaces. Mm. Because when I'm in that space, it was less for me, I was less worried about, oh, I'm not famous. I wasn't worried about that because I'm not. But it was less about that and more about, am I too tall? Do I look ridiculous? It was starting to feel a little bit like my gender dysphoria was kicking in, you know? And that was a very unstable place for me to be on the red carpet. And when I think of the moments where, I mean, I'm generally pretty secure with myself and I'm very content. Everybody knows New York City is a very difficult place to live because it's so expensive. And if you're an actor, the joke is you're really just a waiter. So for me, I was able to make a living and pay my rent and stay in my apartment as a performer only for the entire time I've been here. To me, that's a blessing. And I was able to bring a sense of who I really am into all of those gigs and roles and parts that I've done and jobs that I've done. And so I was always very confident in that. But on the gender, being trans in a lot of these spaces sometimes is a source of anxiety. And so there is two pieces of advice that are very helpful. One of them is an anecdote, so I'll keep it quick. But a friend of mine who's an actress and she's trans was rushing through the airport and she got to the line and the person at the desk was taking care of her. And she was like, well, you know, which way is the restroom? And they were like, sir, the restroom is that way. Obviously she's a trans woman. They were clearly misgendering her. And she said in that moment, normally she would have cursed them out or said something or become really, you know, upset. And instead she just looked at them and she was like, bitch, I gotta go. And she went on and she went to probably flew to the Emmys or the Oscars or wherever she was going to film her TV show. And she says, I was listening to her later to tell that story. And she says, when she tells that story, she's always reminded that her womanhood is not at stake, which is very similar to what I was explaining earlier about Drag Race. for going to Drag Race for me and also doing Pose in that moment when I had to take off my hair. My womanhood is not at stake. And regardless of what they call me or if they call me anything or what they see or how I sound or how tall I am or what signals, if I have a Adam's apple or not, whatever's going on, my womanhood is not at stake. And that's so comforting to me. To hear, because it calms me down. It's like, okay, I'm safe. I'm safe. I'm here in this moment. I'm safe. I'm not in harm's way. And I belong here. And I'm a woman. That's it. And so that has always been very helpful for me. And then another thing that someone told me, which was specifically related to being trans and going through a medical transition, but probably certainly applies to people, whether they're medically transitioning or not. People are gender expansive. And then probably just applies to people evolving in life, but certainly for trans individuals, that there's no race. Ironically, I was on Drag Race, but there's no finish line to your journey. Mm-hmm. We're always evolving. We're always changing. There's no finish line. So there's never a time when you're like, okay, I'm done. That's not possible. You're going to be changing both inwardly and outwardly for the rest of your life until you're no longer here. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's that.
Yeah, the second one that you just mentioned has resonated with me louder than ever more recently because, you know, I've been wanting to be healthier. I've been plus size all my life. And I remember my skinny friends always saying, oh, you know, we're going to be fit for summer or by my birthday or such and such. And I think in this weight loss, you know, health journey of mine, I've said, you know, why do I have to put a checkpoint or an endpoint to when I am going to be healthy? And it just clicked because, you know, I'm around so many people that say, oh, we're going to get fit for summer or for this red carpet or for this photo shoot. And I was like, that's what's been fucking me up the whole fucking time is because I've always put a finish line to every little thing. And I understand that's a lot of people, and that's social media that shapes that because of the seasons and the reasons that give that. So I think it really hit for me that this is like lifestyle change. I know we hear it all the time, but this is just going to be what it's going to be. And I'm going to have to live by these new habits forever and ever if I want anything to change, which is so crazy that you said that.
Yeah, and I view it as a specifically with regard, first of all, thank you for sharing that. It's so beautiful to kind of hear how that message resonates with different people. You know, specifically with regards to, you know, my health and my body and how those two things sit together, it's really it's like a relationship. It's like tending to a relationship. And there's not like just one thing for me that I just eat this or do this and do these five exercises. It's constantly ever changing, ever evolving. And it's obviously continual work. And that's just what it is, you know, and it's going to be what it's going to be. And some days it's going to be this much. And some days it's going to be down here or over here. And there we are. And just deal with it, folks. I'm not saying that to you. I'm just saying in general, everyone outside of us. I think, you know, there are certainly, you know, I love a good moment when the girls are like, oh, she's snatched, you know. But I really do think that from the outside of when I connect with my friends and hear them talk about those same things, getting snatched by summer or getting this body for this, it doesn't feel very good. Not for me, but I feel like I know that there's got to be more to the human experience than putting so much, putting it, what seems like all of our worth in just how other people think we look. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that's very ironic because we're both in beauty. I know we both love makeup. Yes. I know we both like to work a look. And it's important to look and feel, look the way you feel.
For you.
Or feel good for you.
Yes.
For you.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm as we get older, I find myself really not caring.
Right.
Bitch.
Right. Right. It's so funny. And, you know, in my late 20s, early 30s, I feel like I realize being unbothered is such a talent in itself.
It's a talent and a power, darling.
Yes, very much so. Very that. So I realized, I think growing up, not that I ever gigged like a drag queen, but I think similar to me transforming into this persona of Patrick Starr, I didn't give no fucks about what anyone thought of me. I didn't have a panel of judges telling me what to do, what not to do. So I feel like I built that sense of being unbothered. And I like to tell everybody, you know, every day is not a test. It's more of an exercise. So to just make every experience stronger and stronger for you will hopefully become something bigger. So by the time you experience those things, you'll be prepared. And so I feel like being unbothered for so long helped me to become this entrepreneur today and to resonate with people like you had I not had those experiences and those exercises.
Exercises!
Yes, yes. This is kind of funny. I mean, you've exercised this life of being an entertainer and a drag queen, right? Which makes you a very strong entertainer and woman. Pageant question. Does this experience and exercise of your entertainment experience prepare you for All Stars?
Oh! I believe I am. Oh, my neck. I believe I am prepared for All Stars. Uh-huh. Should the opportunity cool off, girl.
The fans want to know. The fans want to know, would you go?
Yes, I would. If the moment presented itself, if the opportunity presented itself in a very beautiful way, then I would certainly go. The opportunity has presented itself, but the timing just definitely was not right. And so if it did, then I, of course I would. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow. There's something like comforting about, you know, classic drag queens. And not too long ago, so I will share with you personally that I grew up in Orlando. I was born in New York, I grew up in Orlando. And I went to a wedding 2 weeks ago, and I had dropped off one of my relatives next to Pulse. And I had not seen the memorial since being there. And so I told my brother, I was like, oh, let's just go see. I haven't seen it. And in my brain, it worked out that I wouldn't be as emotional as I was when I got there. So I broke down crying. I had refused to see it since the incident had happened. And that was my first club at 18, seeing Angelica and Roxy and all the girls and the dolls there. And being in between the door and the street was so hard for me because I was either inside or all the way outside, all fucked up. So being right wedged in between the memorial and the building and the street was very difficult. But that night, I had went to see the girls at Southern Nights in Orlando. And seeing them gig in my hometown gave this kind of like reminder that there is an essence to the beauty of classic drag and iconic personas that resonate with me as like an entrepreneur today, although I have not been a drag, but I'm kind of like drag adjacent because I'm, you know, entertainment in a way. But when I look at you and I see you beaming, it just like, and hearing you and the way that you speak, it's just, it gives me that sense of comfort. And I'm sure it's not just for me, but for so many people. And just seeing what you've done just makes me so emotional for so many people. So thank you for giving that to so many people, because you're doing it for so, I've never cried on my podcast before, but I just want to say thank you so much.
Patrick. Thank you for that. That means a lot to me. Yeah, you know, it's...
You're doing the damn thing.
Thank you.
I didn't mean to make it sad.
I'm trying. But... No, it's not sad. It's not sad. I think it's beautiful. We have a connection, you know. We as sisters and siblings and, you know, you and I, but then also all of the gals that you were talking about that you went and saw, and obviously those beautiful souls that, you know, were taken from us at Pulse. You know, we are all connected. And I went to India not that long ago. And I'm not Indian, but I did go and I was, you know, I wanted to learn as much as I could and meet and connect with as many people as I could. And so I was there for a show. This was a few years ago. And I spoke with a woman named Lakshmi Tripathi, who told me she believes that we're all connected by our pain and the way that we are, the way that we experience this pain as queer folks, as trans women, as non-binary folks, and everyone in as well. And that really resonated with me, you know? And so when I think of that struggle and I think of some of those moments where we have to overcome or some of the pain and the joy, it is important for me that others in our community are able to experience some of what I experience. And so we're all doing it out here, and you obviously are. I'm on your show. And so I appreciate you just as much. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, I mean, it's just amazing to see how far that you've come and where you've come from in terms of who you are, what you are, and where you are now. So, and I'm glad that we can break down as to how and why you got here, and truly an inspiration. And I know when you're gigging on the red carpet in your black Eleganza cape and... whichever, I'm gonna be like, I got to talk to Miss Peppermint. Yes, I did. She's gigging and just gooping the kids still. And I know you still fucking have it. Broadway, Drag Race, TV, movies, music, like you fucking got it, bitch. And I'm so honored to have you and applaud you for your success. So thank you, thank you, thank you. We have a segment called Doing the Most. Rapid fire questions. Do you want to play?
Yes, I'll play. Hit me.
Awesome. Doing the most, bitch. Who do you think is doing the most?
Oh, just in general? Who is doing the most? Right now, I hate to say it, Florida is doing the most right now.
Right. Very, very much. Very much. We're here to make change. Yes, we are. We are. What means the most to you?
Honestly, what means the most to me is love and compassion. I don't mean to sound so pageant-y with that, but, you know, that's what I constantly... I mean, yes, I want to get coins. Yes, I want to have this moment and have this experience. But really, I'm really striving for this love and sort of an empathetic bond with people. I think that's how we will see each other. If we're on two opposite ends and I can fully see you and understand you and you can understand me, then, you know, I think there'll be a lot less conflict. And I think conflict is a part of human nature, but I do think so is empathy. And living in a sort of compassionate sort of vibe is what I'm most interested in. So that means the most to me.
When were you the most messy?
Oh, honey, I'll tell you a story. This is a very New York. First of all, many times. But I would say one time where I was like the most messy was when I was in a club called Beige at B Bar in New York City. And I was just feeling my oats, honey. You couldn't tell me what time it was. And that was it. And so I was there perched, darling, just, and somebody around me, we were just kind of seated. There was a club, but you know, I always find the seats. So I was seating in the area and somebody was down the way at the next table. And she was like, you look very lovely. What appeared to be a gentleman, an older gentleman. I was just 18, 19, 20. So they were obviously not that same age. They looked like they knew where they were. I looked like I was just having fun where I was. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, you look very pretty. I was like, oh, thank you. And I was like, thirsty. Give me your drink. Let me take your drink. Oh. And I snatched the drink. And was like, what? And walked away, darling. I thought I was, honey, you can't tell me nothing. That was the mother of the House of Aviance, Mother Juan Aviance. Kevin Aviance's house mother, you know, the Aviance is was a very big house in New York club world.
Wow.
Somebody was like, girl, that's mother want Aviance. To this day, we are, I love Juan. We've seen each other. We know each other. We always kiki when we see each other out. And so she had no hard feelings. But I couldn't believe that I like stuck my own foot in my mouth, how rude I was. And that was very unlike me, but I was just really feeling it that moment. So I've never done something like that since.
Hmm. Maybe time to recreate it with them. What is the most expensive thing you have?
My personality. Oh. I know that sounds crazy, but I earn money. I earn money because of who I am. And so I've earned more money than I could have ever spent in my personality. That's the most expensive thing that I possess. And it's important for me to kind of stay in that head frame, because otherwise then I'm just a person buying things. But I do own items. I'd say the most expensive, let's make it specific. The most expensive jewelry I've ever owned is a piece of body jewelry. I won't say exactly what, but a piece of body jewelry, you know, body jewelry, especially like piercing jewelry, is typically made of like stainless steel. But one day I was like, you know what? I'm going to go and get this piece of body jewelry that's like 24 karat gold. And I had to search high and low for it. And I found it, and I only break it out for special times, you know?
I see that. Sounds like you're doing the most, Miss Mama.
I'm doing the most, honey.
Yes, you're doing the most. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mother Peppermint, the mother and mother, the sister, for gracing the Say Yes to the Guest stage, another stage again with us. And I applaud you on your expensive personality, your expensive career, your most beloved heart by so many of us. So thank you for joining us. And they can find you everywhere at
Peppermint247.
Yes. All right, everyone, check her out, follow her, beg her to make a TikTok so she can give us all the gems and story times, because I'm sure that's a TikTok account in itself with all the gems you dropped today. So we'll stay tuned for that. Peppermint, I love you, and thank you for joining. Mwah. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Say Yes to the Guest. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast and follow at Say Yes to the Guest on all social platforms. Remember, you are successful. Now go out and be the bad bitch you truly are. Can't wait to chat with you next time. Bye.